Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And let's see what Duff McKagan comes up with today for the exclusive, the worldwide hit, the joke of the week.
It's Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you. I hope you're doing well, man. Hope everybody out there is doing well, all you listeners. You know, I've taken up to cooking again. I used to cook. I was a cook at a restaurant, so I cooked a bunch, but that was back in the day. My wife, Susan, she's such a great cook. So, but anyhow, I've gotten back into it. And the other night, I grilled a chicken for 2 hours, man, and it still wouldn't tell me why it crossed the road. Okay, thank you very much, buddy.
All right. That was a good one. Duff always makes me laugh. What a goofball, right? Like, just totally one of the biggest rock stars in the world and doesn't have a problem with calling in a ridiculous joke every single week. So thanks to Duff for that. And he's spending the summer at home as well, just like the rest of us, because the Guns N' Roses stadium tour was postponed due to the Rona. They're working to rescheduling those dates now. I'm sure Duff will update us as soon as he can. And plus, I think the rumor is Guns N' Roses are working on some new music, which is great. We're also working on some new music with Fozzy, and we had to cancel our spring tour, which is a drag. And we're also rescheduling some of our summer dates as well. So you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fozzy Rock. We're posting show information, the rescheduled dates, the postponed dates, the ticket info, all that sort of stuff. Hope to see you rocking with us soon. And the new quarantine song, Heart of Chrome, is out now. We're going to play it next week right here on Talk is Jericho. And I think you'll like it. It's featuring special guest Bruce Kulick. Only in a pandemic can you have start an 80s Kiss cover band with the ex-guitar player of Kiss, right? And don't forget about tomorrow night, Saturday Night Special returns, 9 p.m. Eastern on Facebook Live and my official YouTube channel. Answering your questions, telling stories, we'll do a sing-along. I might have a guest appearance from Rybo and Speewee, the Peggers. You guys seem to like the Q&A, so we're just continuing to do that. We're enjoying it. I hope you're enjoying it. And even though things are slowly reopening and closing and reopening, I'm not sure how much longer we'll be able to do Saturday nights, but I like it. I'm enjoying it, and I plan to continue for as long as we can. So come hang tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern, Facebook Live, and my official YouTube channel. All right, one of my oldest friends in the wrestling business and in the world is now working in AEW. He hit the big time. Returning to the show, he's been here many, many times before, but he's going to talk about his new gig with AEW and the multiple additions that it took to land that spot. It wasn't easy for him. He's also telling stories about his early days wrestling in Japan. You know him from the special episode I did a few years back to celebrate my 25th anniversary in wrestling. He's been on a few times talking, of course, Dr. Luther, Lenny St. Clair. He just made his AEW debut just a few months ago, and now he is a regular on Dark, and he was in the Lumberjack match the other night. So he's finally made it. The original Death Dealer hits the big time right here on Talk is Jericho. It's crazy. It's like the first time we've been in the same hotel for a while. It's almost like being back in Japan again.
But nicer.
Yeah. Remember some of those hotel rooms in Japan, how small they would be?
Oh.
Have you ever seen the one when you walk in and the TV will be up in the corner, and then there's a bed, and there's room enough to get to the bathroom where you can barely put your case or suitcase
down. Right.
And then you get in the bathroom, and there's literally can barely, it's like a bathroom in an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And the shower's over top of the toilet, so you actually, like, with a mirror, so that you
it's like a jail.
Yeah.
Like when you take a shower, it gets the toilet wet, which yeah. always freaked me out.
But you can do everything at one time.
Yeah. And they say, shit in a shower, eh?
Yeah. Shit, shower, and shave.
Hey, the room is so small, when you stick your key in the keyhole, it broke the window.
It's true.
How are ya? But it really was like that type of way. So,
how are ya? But in all seriousness, as a wrestler and a comic, everything is awesome in Japan, too.
Well, okay. I mean, you just had to say that?
Just had to say it. It's my Bobby Bittman.
Oh, okay. So we're here with Dr. Luther, newly signed to All Elite Wrestling, which is a long time coming, because it's really funny. We were talking about this. So March 11th. We were in Salt Lake City, and we were still thinking that maybe we could do Rochester on the 18th and Prudential Center in Newark on the 25th. And
I went to the ring to have the match. I came back 20 minutes later, and everything had been canceled because the NBA had shut down and Tom Hanks was diagnosed with corona. But something else happened that day that was amazing, timing-wise. And what was that?
I signed the contract.
Just think about that, though. Like, you signed the contract like 3 hours before the whole world just went downhill.
It's ironic that the original Death Dealer signs the contract right when the plague starts.
The plague?
The plague. But yeah, it was crazy. But I wouldn't expect anything less than everything that I've done in my life. So
right. Well, I mean, obviously, there's so much to talk about. But let's just talk about your journey to AEW right off the bat. Because once again, it's one of those things when you signed, there were people coming out of the woodwork that are like, oh my God, is that Dr. Luther? We used to be big fans and watch him all the time and all this other thing. So it's almost like a rebirth, a resurrection for you. And I know you're a super humble guy and all that sort of stuff, but I mean, first of all, how does that feel for you to find out that you have a lot of people who really appreciate the work that you've done and the work that you're doing?
Oh, it's amazing. It feels pretty good. I got a lot of, you know, it's weird because now I'm getting a lot of that. I used to watch a lot of your matches on video when I was a kid.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, that's cool. But so maybe I helped to influence them in a tiny little way somehow.
Because there was a point in time when you would like, it seemed like you were a little bit, well, for a while, down on what you had accomplished in the business.
Still a little bit. Still I guess, now? You know, just didn't sometimes feel like I lived up to a potential that I kind of had set myself or thought that I could get or whatever. So, but you have to take everything in perspective, I guess, as well. Like the things that I didn't feel like I accomplished, I still accomplished more than.
Right. Cause we used to talk about that. Like
3/4 of the guys wrestling, I guess.
Like remember Len Barry? He was in the AHL. He's the highest leading scorer in NHL history, AHL. And never made it to the NHL. So would that mean that he failed or that he's the greatest player in AHL history?
And yeah, that's totally true. Like all-star every year.
Right. And for the longest time, you kind of fell into that category because we can talk about the times you kind of just fell through the cracks for these chances you have after being such a big star early in your career.
And you know, it's the thing is too with everything, it's like anything – in entertainment, movies, music, wrestling, it's just being in the right place, right time, or the right what they're looking for, or, you know, sometimes it doesn't matter, like, who you are, sure. I guess. Like, how many people try out for movies that are just phenomenal and don't get the part?
Right.
Because it just didn't fit at that time, you know? I thought I was kind of like a four-tier player, I guess. If you know, like baseball, they always talk about that. Like you have your minor league, and then you have the major. There's a lot of guys that come up and come down, but they're like the four-star guys that weren't quite good enough always, or in the wrong team to catch on with that team. But they're better than the minor league team. So,
but you had a group of guys. Basically anybody they ever worked with, but you're talking from you know, we have our little text group with Lance Storm and Don Callis and Paul Lazenby and myself and you. And it's like, we all know, like, you know, Don Callis knows how great of a worker you are and always have been, right? But it just seems, and I want to get into this because it really is to me like such a great story about how never give up on your dream. Because listen, you had, it's almost like you're Theron Fleury. You won the Stanley Cup at 18.
Early. Yeah.
Right? And then like we'll go through that. But I guess my question is, so what was your journey like to get signed by AEW?
I had a really good friend call me.
Well, I mean, so I'll start it off. So the Dark Order was looking for a leader.
Okay, I didn't know if we wanted to get into
I'll say. So the Dark Order was looking for a leader. And they were thinking about using a couple different guys. I know Jim Mitchell was one of the guys mentioned. And I was like, our whole concept of AEW is trying to create new talent and new stars. Mm-hmm. And I said, if you're looking for a weird, you know, a weirdo.
A weird, super good looking guy.
Yeah, a weird, hot as f- guy. then I don't know anybody. But if you're looking for a...
How are you?
If you're looking for a weird guy, like if you're looking for a guy that can play a weird character... Because the word about you is you're a chameleon. You can play anything. Mm-hmm. I've got the guy. And I never started an AEW thinking, you know, I'm going to get my friends in here. But just to me, it's like, this is the perfect guy. Because I know Don and I had talked about you doing something for Impact for a while, but then you hurt your...
I tore my tricep right before that was going to happen.
Yeah. And Don runs that company. And listen, I don't run anything in AEW, but I'm like, if you're looking for a guy, I can find this. I have this guy. And then they said, okay, we'll send in some tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Tapes, like I saw it's 1990. Send in some videos or whatever, or digital platform, blah, blah, blah. So let's
take off from there. You kind of describe what was going on. I recorded a bunch, and I remember I sent in one, and you said they liked it. I sent another, they liked it. I sent another. So I sent three audition tapes in.
Right, let's talk about that a bit, though, because you had watched AEW for a bit, but sending in audition tapes, like, how did you make it? What did you do?
So you sort of described the group as best, like, that you knew it, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And
let's say that kind of like a cult or something?
Yeah,
or?
It was like a cult.
Not the cult. Love Removal Machine. The first one you sent in, you were singing that, and I said, "Not that kind of cult."
You said "not that kind of cult," so I was like, "All right." So I just sort of thought, like, sort of from what my angle would be on sort of that. So I kind of thought, okay. So when I did the WRP, Father Dante, and you were like, you told me then we were talking, and you were like, "It maybe like a nice cross between Luther and Dante would be a good." Mix.
Yeah, because Dr. Luther was your original character in Japan, which was more of a...
But then I morphed them over here right?
In a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Well, just like you.
Yeah.
We're from the same mindset, you know, from the same place. We're the same origin kind of story,
I guess.
You have to change. You can't stay the same. Yeah. You can't stay one-dimensional all the time. It won't work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I've changed a lot over time, depending on where I've been or where I... Because not every gimmick's going to work in every place, and especially in, like, indie places or whatever. So then I watched a few, like, and listened to a few different cult things and watched some different videos online to try to... I don't like to copy one person. I like to, like, sort of pick little things from different people.
Right.
And then, you know, make it my own. Just like, you know, you do the same thing, right? So... I took all this stuff together, and it was kind of cool that I did the Father Dante thing because that kind of gave me a sort of a base because I did the same thing then.
Well, Father Dante was – so you can just watch it now. It's called Wrestling Revolution Project, which you guys filmed. We don't have to get too like much into
10 years
it. 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And the videos are just out
just
now on
resurfaced.
YouTube, and you played kind of a like a priest, like an evil
I played an
evil
albino, priest. Southern albino priest.
The Southern accent was really good too,
well,
especially from a guy from
Calgary,
Alderside.
Yeah, it was fun, and like I did most of my stuff on like one take on all my interviews.
So you're able to use some of that element and combine it with Luther for this cult leader.
Yeah,
thing.
But I wasn't so. I remember the one I did, one of the audition tapes. I did kind of more like Father Dante, where I was, you know, really yelling, kind of like impassionate passionate, like preaching wise. And then you're like, let's try to humble it down a little bit. And Jake the Snake, who's in AEW, you're like, that's a good kind of role model, kind of like how he his delivery, which is always spot on.
Yeah.
And so I kind of thought, okay, I'll take this angle, but kind of mix it with that. And you said it was really good. And so I
remember you did one with a candle.
That was the first one I did. Yeah. I actually visually thought it was pretty cool. Did it in a candle through a mirror. So I did like the reflection video.
Yeah.
I was trying to make it all.
You blew it out.
The blew it at the end,
So I got that one and I sent it to because the Dark Order was kind of Nick and Matt's thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was more thinking, well, let me just show it to Tony and Cody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tony's the boss, right? And Cody's like, I like his delivery. He's got that cadence of Jake Roberts. And I think then they said, well, let's bring him in. For some, like, basically a screen test. That's kind of what it was, right?
Yep.
So was it Dallas was the first
one?
And this was before Christmas.
This was before Christmas,
December 4th or 5th?
I came in, was it Dallas or Champagne?
Before Champagne.
Yeah.
Champagne.
Yeah. So I came in there, did the screen test with Brandy. Or did I do them by myself first?
Yeah, because I think what Cody was thinking was that Brandy was going to do the Nightmare Collective. And I think right off the bat, the Bucks were like, we want... I think they wanted I think the original plan was Marty Scurll to be the leader of the Dark Order, and then they wanted Matt Hardy, which then morphed, of course, to Luke Harper. So I think that you were kind of out of the equation because they had other guys in mind. But Cody was the one who saw...
He liked the videos or whatever. Right. So
let's try the screen test with Randy.
And then I did it, and they liked it, and they loved the back of my head. And and then it went from there. And I mean, I'm still trying to see where I think about I fit in with that a little bit at the beginning. I still think that it was a good idea with that group. It was tough for me being in like the women's division because I couldn't really touch or do anything with the
girls.
Right,
you were kind of just like this mascot.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool though, at least there was a spot for you because it did at least get you on camera.
Got me in there, yeah.
But the thing was, like we said, December 4th or 5th or 10th or whatever to March 11th, there was a lot of tests that you had to pass to get signed.
Yep, just did everything I needed to do, everything asked, and which is what I still will do all the time. And anything thrown at me, I totally did my best.
But it wasn't made easy for you.
It was not, no.
Right.
Which is 100% the opposite of what everybody online thinks.
Well, everyone thinks, he's Jericho's friend. He just got in, but we would never do that.
This is what I don't even get involved in that. The only time I say anything to anybody, if that was the case, I would have been in WWE a long time ago.
Yeah.
End of story.
Yeah. Or you would have been in AEW October 2nd when debuted.
When it started.
2019.
But like I would have been, if he was going to give out jobs to all his buddies, we all would have been
right
with you way back then.
Yeah, and that's not how it works.
You know what I mean? And
neither one of us would want that.
No, the one thing I said right off the bat, and I've said it to everybody that I know, because I don't really tell strangers all this stuff. But I'm like, I respect this more than anything because I feel like I earned
you
it.
You did earn it.
So.
Because that's obviously I know what you can do. And when people see this guy come in, who's this guy? I would go talk to Jim Ross and obviously the Excalibur and Taz. Like, here's his story. Here's what he's done. And then that's all you got to say. And then let him do the rest. So I thought it was just really cool that you really did earn it. Because I brought in five guys here. Moxley. Dean Malenko, recruited. Matt Hardy, Jake Hager, and you. That's it.
That's
a pretty good fucking track record.
I was going to say, that's also a very great group to be in with.
Right? So it's not like, here's so-and-so that's been on TV once and just sits backstage and eats catering. That's not what you would want or I would want. So, anyways, it was a great day when you signed that contract.
Oh, my God.
Better when, 20 minutes later the world ended. But, anyways... It would because you earned it, but you didn't just earn it through that four-month period of being here. You've earned it through the last 30 years. I want to talk about a couple of the other experiences that you had where things were kind of removed. Not anything that you did, just times changing because it happened so many times.
Every time.
Every time.
Yeah, every time.
But let's start with the Dr. Luther character. Like, I know we all know you started in Stampede and we basically started going to Japan around the same time. Mm-hmm. And I went one tour and I think you got the next tour because there was a guy in Calgary.
I went a year later.
A year later. Okay. Yeah. But there was a guy who was like an agent and he was getting guys booked from Calgary. There was a connection there. We don't need to get into that. But tell us about how you created the idea of the Luther character.
So when they came to watch us, right, they came to watch you and Lance, right?
Right, spar. And we were best buds, so I brought you in to like kind of spar with us, and then you got the gig, and I did.
But I came in to watch, remember? Because I was wanting to kind of maybe – I was on the borderline of wanting to quit because, it's like we weren't getting tons of gigs.
And this is only like two or three – when did you start? 89, 87? 87. Okay, so this is about 91,
so this is,
92.
Yeah, 3 or 4 years later.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. And so you're supposed – was it Randy Rudd and then some other dude?
So we went to this – there was like a
it was like a community.
A community, like condos. You would go to where did you used to live with the all the cats used to live with? Like some kind of
all the condos.
Yeah, it'd be like, welcome to Mercury Manor. And you'd go in the gate and there'd be 800 condos and a bunch of dudes and chick, whatever.
And it's the place where they'd have the ping pong table set up.
It was the community center.
Yeah.
So they had a ring set up in there.
that he set up just for this.
Just for this. And it was basically a live audition for Sakai.
Yeah.
Sakai worked for Gong Magazine.
Gong Magazine and FMW as like their scouting like
talent
agent.
Relations or whatever. So he came over from Japan to scout Calgary because Calgary always had the reputation of having great wrestlers and deservedly so. We all trained.
And Japan loved Calgary, but.
Loved Calgary and would send their boys to Calgary. And if you train in Calgary, you automatically had street cred.
Yeah.
So continue.
So you're like, hey, come, we have this thing, you should come. And I remember saying, like, I didn't really want to go. But you're my bro, so of course, you know, I'm going to go. So I go meet them and I'm just going to watch. And then
it's me and Lance and Randy Rudd.
I can't remember that.
Was it Gillespie?
Steve Gillespie? No, it was like a guy that you trained.
Jim Peterson or something?
No, it was the dude who was always real nasty.
Smelling wise?
Yeah.
Colin Hawes?
Yes.
Why the hell was
I think
he?
It was, yeah, I think
he
it
used
was
to wear sweatpants to wrestling school and it would always be stinky.
I had to wear his stuff to wrestle.
Oh my gosh. You'd wear Colin Hawes stinky dude. Sweatpants?
Yes.
So right there, you deserve a Colin track.
He showed up with on crutches and he's like, I did something to my ankle the night before. And you're like, and I remember you coming up and being like, hey, can you wrestle? And I was like, I didn't bring any stuff. And you're like, well, you can wear his stuff. And I was like, dude, like, he was a nice guy. Don't get me wrong.
My neighbor's a nice guy. I didn't mean he should be wearing stinky sweats.
He's not the cleanest dude around.
He had bad hygiene, shall we
it
say.
It was bad. So I was like, oh my God. I was like, you owe me, dude.
Well, apparently, I really didn't. So we did a match.
So I had to borrow this dude's stuff, which if you threw his stuff against the wall, it would stick to it. So it's pretty gross. Anyway, we do a match. We talk, which was easy because I worked with you and Lance all the time.
Yes.
So
we worked all the indie shows. Oh, it was all California.
It was always me and somebody against you guys usually.
Because we always had great matches.
Yeah. And so we didn't have to really plan anything. Like, it was just we're doing our match. I think that kind of helped because we were all in sync. And
it was
everything.
Almost like a no people match like we were having now.
It totally was.
Yeah.
It was in front of three people.
Yeah. And one of them was Sakai.
Sakai, the agent, and Colin Haas were there. That was it.
Sakai, the man who shan't be named. And Colin Haas was there.
I just don't want to name him. He's been named enough.
Yeah, exactly. He's had more than enough publicity.
So we had our match, and then it was kind of later. They didn't really say anything. I think we were almost going to be.
I think Titan was there, too. Because Titan was already in.
See, I don't remember.
The late Rick Titan was already. Because I remember there's a picture of you, me, Lance, Titan.
That was later.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
That's when the man who shouldn't be named was trying to act.
Oh, yeah,
like
we
a
were like
way.
We were like and Fred's boys.
Yeah,
or whatever,
yeah, brought us in for this photo shoot thing, and that was one of the photos.
Right.
Which is actually a great photo.
I guess it is. Yeah, yeah. So we had the match,
we had the match, and then we're leaving, and then the guy asked me. He came over to talk to me. And he said it was really good. And then his words were, Onita will really like to wrestle with you, which I didn't even know who that was.
Right.
Right. And I was like, huh? And they're like, we want to like offer you to bring you over. And I was like,
on the spot?
Yeah. It was like later that night. But I was like, what the? What? And then once again, like, but I've been told from like Langley and stuff so many times, you're going play. Like,
you're going to Germany.
So I never really got super hyped. Like, I obviously was like, well, okay.
Because you probably don't even know if this guy's legit.
Yeah, I don't know any.
And just for background, so a lot of times in Calgary, guys would say, okay, get me your passport. You're going to Germany in 2 weeks.
So many times I was told that.
And me too. All of us.
So many. Well, that's what got me blackballed.
Right.
Because
I
would tell all these guys, like, it's not happening.
Yeah, yeah. Len got blackballed in the Calgary scene because he would tell guys that the guys in charge are basically full of shit. So you see Sakai, he comes over and.
Yeah, and then they're like, but his exact words are like, oh, Nita would really like to wrestle with you. And I don't know who the hell that is. I know who Colin Hawes is, but I don't know who Onita is. I was like, okay, that sounds awesome. And then it wasn't. Then he took some pictures. Then he's like, come back. I think it was the next day. Come back, and we want to take photos, some kind of photo, because he was still there. And that was one of the photos that was when I first went. I got a full page in Gong Magazine which is really cool.
So and Sakai then, obviously took a real liking to you because he worked for Gong Magazine. He was the editor or whatever. Yeah.
So they took some photos. And so I remember showing up with sunglasses and I had borrowed a blazer from Fred, which, you know, how big he was, barely fit me.
Yeah, he was like 3 feet tall.
Yeah, and like 110 pounds. But so, because I didn't own any dress clothes or nothing like that. So I wore this blazer, slicked my hair back, and wore some sunglasses and took some pictures in front of a piece of paper because they didn't have a contract or anything there. Yeah. So in front of a piece of paper, like I'm signing something. And but that's then that ran in a magazine. And then when they showed me, I was like, okay, this is real.
Yeah.
Like, and then they're like, okay, you need to get a new name, because at the time I'm wrestling as Luscious Lenny St. Clair, right? Kind of like. And it's not really, you know, vicious name or like
right, Luscious Lenny. Yeah,
I guess it was kind of like a Brutus Beefcake ish. I don't know. It was the '80s type thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was like, okay. So I remember like Silence of the Lambs was really big, and so at the time too, like I knew FMW only from you. Knew nothing about it.
And Titan told us too, because we were really close with Titan.
I still didn't really know.
But I'd only been there once, and I was such a wannabe trying to get back. Like, I was trying to everything I could do to get back there.
But you guys were supposed to. But you know what the thing is? When you went, you guys were really green.
Yeah, super green.
Super green.
39 matches I had. It was probably terrible.
You're good enough to go.
Well, yeah, whatever.
But you went, and I remember that's why they came to watch, because they said, we'll come back in a year, go back to Calgary for a year, wrestle, and then we'll come back.
Mm-hmm.
But you did get to go back.
Well, that's fine.
With Lance Storm 2.
Eric Fries. So Silence of the Lambs is popular.
So Silence of the Lambs is popular. I still don't know really. I didn't really know. I don't think we really knew what like hardcore was. Or
it wasn't a thing back
death
then.
Death matches or whatever you want to call them. Like, I knew nothing about FMW. I didn't know anything about the gimmicks they run with or anything really. All I was told was to get something kind of, and I don't know if this was lost in some of the translations, but they were like sort of like scary or like mean. Mm. So I was like, scary or mean. Like, so I took that literally, because I do take everything literally, which, you know, it's like probably not good. But so I was like, okay, scary. So I'm going to get a.
You don't literally mean it.
I don't literally.
You don't literally say it, but the point should be clear.
It should be clear. So. So I was like, okay, so I mean, I got a piece of paper and I wrote all kinds of stuff down, like every kind of horror movie person at the time. But then that came out and I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. I could wear the straight jacket, like have a straight jacket and go out and I won't have to do too much talk. Like then I thought about talking, like, I don't know, like I wasn't sure if I should talk like him in the movie, like do quotes from it.
Clarice.
Yeah, but then I was like, are they even going to know what that is? Like. Mm. So anyway, it got to the, and this was really quick, like it was within a week I was leaving type thing, like it was really fast, right? So I was like, shoot. So I got my mom to make a straitjacket, and then I can't remember where I got that coverall. Those coveralls, for one thing, remember the first ones I went with, those green ones? They were kind of a little small for me, but they were like winterized because they're winter coveralls for Calgary, so they're insulated. You know how much I sweat in my balls off. Because
this
in
those was like
things.
Kind of spring, early summer, and in Japan it means 100 degrees.
It was hot, and those things were so insulated, and it was crazy. So I had those for a couple tours until I like just went and bought another pair of coveralls. But it was like,
so you figured out you could take the insulation out. So your first, you put the coveralls on.
The straight jacket I got from my mom. She made me awesome.
Great seamstress.
Awesome.
Let me just say this. Hold on. Your mom was so great in the early days of, like, I was always about different costume.
Oh, yeah.
She made so much great stuff.
Fast.
And great stuff.
Yeah.
So she was really integral in my ascension in the business, because I really believe it's because I always had cool shit.
A lot of the guys around, I mean, I had all kinds of stuff.
You had the best stuff, though. You're such a,
And then
I got to make four outfits for Leonard, and then I might have time to make yours.
And then I had like four pairs of boots. Like I had everything, man. I was set. Help me on those barely wrestling shows.
Yeah.
So, which is funny, because then when I went to Japan, I wore coveralls, which I had all these awesome tights.
Well, that's sad, but like you said earlier, but it's about the part they needed you to play.
It's about the part it needed to play, and like, I'll do whatever I need to do, right? So she makes me that, and I was like, I took some goalie pads I had, and that's what I use the straps for, and then I needed a mask. So one of my buddies, I got a football mask from him, and then we just...
Was it Leighton Jans?
It was not Leighton Jans. But me and Leighton, remember when me and you and Leighton Jans, we'd get a limo.
We'd go to the Copa with Lola Falana.
Oh, we go to the world and elsewhere.
But yeah, but your first version, and like you said, you made this very quickly, was the straight jacket your mom made and like a football mask. A
football mask with the Velcro straps on the back, which actually became kind of my look for a long time until it got stolen on a show. Which
really?
Was crazy. Yeah, one of the big World Tag Team Tournament show when we were wrestling Boulder and Gladiator, one of the young girls at the end of the night was in the back and she was crying. And I can't remember who, someone was yelling at her. I don't remember who it was. One of the higher ups, and she was like super, I was like, shoot, homegirl's getting in trouble. And then they came into the room, like her and I think Ito and someone else. And they're like, she lost your mask. And I was like, what? Cause I used to run when I'd come in through the door, I'd run around and chase everybody.
And people would run screaming from you. People would run screaming from
you. We're going to show some videos. I got some old they're all on VHS, so I'll get them transferred over. I'm sure they'll put them on the TV here. But they would run like Godzilla's coming through.
That's the truth.
A bad term to use, but
it's not. Like, I remember watching your matches where you were on the ring on the ring apron in a tag match, and you would just turn and look at the crowd.
And then take off.
They would run.
Yeah.
And this is no wrestling exaggeration, guys. This is real shit. They were terrified of you.
Yeah, terrified. And I didn't have a stick. I didn't have a sword. It was just me.
Facial expressions. Yeah.
And they were scared to death. So she came in. So I would throw my mask off, kind of drop behind me, and the young girls would always pick it up. And then
young boys, the rookies around the ringside.
Yeah. And it was usually the girls that chased the guyzing around right. And get our stuff. So, and then I take my jacket off and then it would just fall and go. But I guess there's so many people and there's chaos because we were just attacking those guys and fighting. She just lost the mask. So, but I wasn't upset. I mean, stuff happens, right?
Yeah.
So it goes on from there. Another story like about the believing it. I remember it was like, I can't remember if it was near the end of my first tour or the beginning of my second tour. Sexy Muscle, Ricky Fuji.
Sexy Muscle. Hold on. Ricky Sutton Fuji, who would ask me such great questions as, how many pairs of sunglasses you have, brother? What?
He's a stud, though.
He's a great guy. Ricky Fuji, Sexy Muscle. Ricky
I think,
Fuji.
Wasn't that his sexy
it
muscle?
It might as well then. Yeah.
It is today.
So what does Sexy Muscle
but it's
say?
It's more like Sexy Muscle.
Sexy Muscle, brother.
I love Ricky Fuji.
So what did he say?
So he came in with like three or four of the young girls. And I think Megumi Kudo was there and someone else.
Oh, Megumi Kudo. Wow.
Yeah. So they came in.
She was pretty hot.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. So they come in and, you know, you don't really talk to them when they're there or anything.
They don't really speak a lot of English.
No. Yeah. And but, I mean, they kind of keep them away,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I had a young girl kind of, I don't know how to. I want to say like assigned to me, I guess, for lack of a better word.
To be your assistant.
Yeah, so she'd come in and braid my hair before my matches.
Well, you used to have long hair. You had super long hair.
Yeah, so she'd come
you
in.
You don't anymore.
I do not. Rub it in, man. Your hair looks, you're having good hair days.
I look good, man.
Yeah, I have hair envy. I think I told you that one day. I was like, damn you, man.
You used to have long hair.
Yeah.
Jet black, raven.
Jet black hair, yeah. Super long. And so she'd come in and, like, braid my hair all the time, spoke no English other than Russo, hey.
Yeah, Russo. And so then we talked about this earlier about the L's in Luscious Lenny, but Luther would be pronounced Russa, and I can even see how it's written in katakana, which is the Japanese alphabet, Russa.
Yeah, Russa.
Dr. Russa.
Yeah.
Where'd you come up with Luther, by the way?
Oh, so that was on... Oh, anyway, before I get to that, outside. So Ricky brings them in because they wanted... And they were super scared. And I'm like, totally just me. I'm like, hey, how's it going? And they're like, got super big-eyed and staring at me because they thought that my ring character was real.
Yeah.
Like, I was the real demented guy they brought over. But they wanted to come and see because when I left the building, like, in the locker room, I was totally... normal. But as soon as I would leave that locker room, I was in character. Like if yeah,
you're
I
like,
went
you're
out
like
to the
Ozzy
hallway,
or Alice Cooper, as soon as you leave the dressing room, you turn into this other
even
person.
Even if I went out to the hallway, which didn't I didn't ever really go out to watch matches, but a couple times I did, I would act my character in case someone saw me. Right. But going to the bus, I would go in gear, or I'd put my street clothes on and then put the coverall stuff over top. And then coming back or going to the arena and leaving, I'd always be in character.
Yeah.
Even getting on the bus, if fans tried to gather around me, I'd spin around with my bag and like try to like chase them away and stuff. But then once in a while, I would sign autographs. Because I remember one time being denied, and it tormented me forever.
Right,
so
right,
I was like,
till today.
If there's little kids, I would always sign up.
So where did Luther come from?
So Luther came from on the plane going over. I was like, hey, I still didn't really have a name yet.
What were they saying in the magazines? Your name is Lenny Sinclair?
So they put this little, I think the first picture they put in was small, and I think they used that name. And then the bigger one was Dr. Luther, because I came up with it just before I left. I didn't have the full gimmick. I was still on the plane when I was coming out with the full gimmick. But the name I got, because I was like, how about Hannibal Lecter? And then they're like, oh, you can't use Lecter. So then I was like, okay, Luther, Luther, Luther. And then I was like, two things came to my mind right away was, well, there's Lex Luthor. Mm-hmm. And
Luther Vandross.
Close.
Oh, okay. What was the other one?
Luther from the Warriors. Come out and play.
Oh, right. That's his name.
He was,
Warriors.
Yeah.
He was, one of our favorite movies. We even named your brother
Ajax
from the movie, because he vaguely resembled James Remar.
We were younger, he did.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So
I never knew that. You got that from Luther.
So it was like, okay, he was a great villain.
Yeah.
Right? And he kind of had that whiny scream thing, which I kind of do wrestling now too. So I kind of cherry pick a little bit from that. So, and then I was like, okay, so I can go with Luther. So for the first couple tours, I was actually Dr. Hannibal Luther. Like I had the full long name.
Gimmick, yeah.
And then one night I was at home, and at like 3:30 in the morning, I get a call, and it's Tarzan Goto. And he said two things. They wanted me to drop my agent, which...
Who's the man who shan't be named?
Yeah, don't have to ask me twice.
Yeah, and we don't need to say anymore that he actually tried to cause heat between us. So, yeah, he
with everybody. Yeah. So he came over to Japan one time.
Oh, my gosh.
Flew himself over, but said they flew him over. Why would they fly? And then he kept telling all of us to bow in front of him. And I was like, what? I'm not bowing.
What? Like,
dude, yeah.
Okay, so, guys, hold on. This is some little idiot that really.
He's a troll,
and he would make himself come off like he was the leader. And we can't even get. We have so much to talk about.
He even tried to come off as a wrestler on his
own
shows.
He made us drive from Calgary to Vancouver
for
to pick up our work visas
for nothing
that weren't there. Oh, we have to go to Tijuana. He knew they weren't there. We drove 12 hours.
Dude, how about when we get into the office and they didn't even know who he was talking?
No
about?
Idea.
Nothing.
So, anyways, so the troll. We'll call him.
He flies over. To Japan.
On his own dime, but says
he's got all these.
And he wanted you to bow on him?
Yeah, so he's wanting to do all these new contracts with everybody. So I don't even know what he's talking to them about. Because he won't tell us.
Because his thing is, I own these guys.
That's what he tells
them. AKA Luther, Titan. I wasn't there at the time, although I wish I was. Jericho, Lance Storm.
Yep.
All the guys from Calgary, this troll was the leader of.
Yep.
So he asked you to bow and.
So he would tell us, like, I know he told me, I can't remember if he told Titan or not, but he was like, hey, bow for me. And I was like, what? He's like, bow in front of me. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he goes, because it's a sign of respect, because, like, I'm your boss. And it's like, you bow for them. I go, but that's their thing. That's
and
not
you're
our
not
thing.
My boss, right.
And so it's like, I'm not going to bow. And so he got super choked at me and, like.
Choked? How como is that?
De como.
Yeah,
I love como.
So you told him F off.
I was.
So what did Tarzan Goto say though? Drop your agent.
Oh, so Tarzan Goto is like, drop your agent. We want to bring in another guy. And I was like, actually, this is drop the agent was actually the next tour, so it wasn't the same one. I forgot. So this one was about bringing another guy. We want to bring in another guy. We want him to look like you. And I was like, what? Because that seemed weird. Right? We want him to be like you. and we're going to call him Hannibal. And it's like, well, I'm Dr. Hannibal Luther, and you want him to look like me. What? Like, and
real weird Japanese,
and,
right?
And the English wasn't like dead on. So I was trying to still, his English was actually really good.
Yeah.
But
is he still with us?
I think so.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
So I kind of was like trying to figure out what they're talking about. And then I realized they want to call him, like take my first name and call him Hannibal and then shorten me to Dr. Luther. And then they said they want to bring in another guy to just take all, like basically all the bumps and to keep me strong. So I was like, oh, so I have a can, I'm in a group with the cannon fodder guy and then me. So I was like, okay. So they're like, so then our agent is like, I want 10 names. Give me 10 people. Well, first off, he's like, who do you want to go? So like, Bars, you're there.
Other well, let me just interject here. I was like, so wanting to go back to Japan.
And you went up with gimmick after gimmick after
you went like 10 times, and I was like, here's my favorite one. And this is classic at the time. We're great friends. We're brothers. And I was like, when you went over there, because I was expecting when
you did pretty good.
Well, I was expecting when you went over there, all they'd be talking about was how great I was. And then one time I said, like, have they mentioned me? And you went, no, they haven't. And I was just like, womp, womp, womp. So, Len, have they mentioned me? No.
Dude, they never even talked to me, so I don't know. Like, the whole time I was there, I talked to Anita, like, maybe twice.
So you had 10 examples or 10 names to be your part. I was one of them. There's a picture of us.
There is a picture. We did audition pictures.
And this is old school pictures where you can't just take them on your cell phone. You got to take a picture on like a...
done.
Like a... Wind.
Yeah.
Wind. Take them to the pharmacy.
The one-hour photo.
Yeah. And you go back like, oh, this picture's rad. Let's send it in. And I didn't get the gig.
Because the agent denied it. So I had every guy on my list denied.
Who was on your list?
Oh, shoot. I can't remember. You were on it.
Lazenby
was on it.
I think everybody on our group text. Callus.
Everybody was there.
Storm.
And Brian Ward I put on
okay.
there. Gillespie was number 10. Wow. He was a Calgary guy.
And Gillespie was a Calgary guy. And he passed away recently. God bless Gillespie. But he was actually probably the best guy for the job if you needed a punching bag.
He could bump. That's you know, the he thing. Was yeah. yeah. So and I thought like if all the guys I was getting no. And I was like, ugh. He kept trying to push.
Who did the agent want? Who did the troll want?
He kept trying to push, and I kept saying no. This guy named Luscious Bubbles.
Oh yeah, it was a little fatso.
Yeah. His buddy.
Yeah.
So I was like, there's no way. I was like, I'm giving you
and all by the way, guys, names hold on, think, guys that can work. Hold on. Think about this. This is his actual wrestling name. Luscious Bubbles.
Well, I remember being on a show that he put on. That
how much of that last pull did you get in your mouth?
And dude, I just spilled like the whole glass on the table. So I have it filled up right to the friggin' rim. Fill it to the rim.
Well, you can't put on a table. What's wrong with you?
No, don't put
on a table. It's terrible.
So now I'm just putting my arm in it. What'd you say?
Don't say the F word, Lusa.
I just swore.
He wanted
my image now.
Listen, here's the thing. I don't want to spend too much time on this. We don't give a shit.
So I was on a show and I was wrestling as Luscious Lenny St. Clair. He's like, I can't call you that. And I was like, what? He's like, I'm calling you Lethal Lenny. And I was like, that's not what I've been wrestling. He goes, no, because I have Luscious Bubbles.
Because you're dressed like a kind of like a very outlandish like character.
Like a fashion guy.
Right.
And then so I was like, all right. So I became Luscious. So I was like, and that guy was totally the shits. Like terrible. So- So I was like, you're saying no to all these guys that can work that are friends of mine that I would like to travel with if I have to travel. And you're saying no because you want me to take your buddy.
No power.
No, but to us, like I thought he did at the time.
This is like in the first 2 years of our career.
Right? You know what I mean? So I'm like, ugh.
But let me ask this. Hold on. Let's just cut off about that guy. How big was the character of Dr. Luther in Japan in the early 90s? And put your humbleness aside.
After my like... second or third show, we went on the bus. And you know the bus, when you walk on, there'd be hundreds of people or
around the bus. Yeah,
I don't know. It was packed.
Yeah,
you know. And FMW's drawn pretty good crowds. It's like
FMW was hot. Town,
so
this is the original kind of ECW style hardcore.
Way before we did all that stuff.
Before any of these, the original. People, yeah, yeah.
You know, that's why to this day I'm like, oh, what are these guys? But I was like, dude, realistically, like I'm grandfathered in as one of the starters. No, but
you are the original death dealer in a lot of ways. So what's your point? When
there's anyway, I got on the bus and they're just chanting the whole crowd my name constantly, like. Wouldn't shut up. And I remember Boulder looking back and all, like Boulder just dropped his
Horace Boulder, Hulk Hogan's nephew.
It was like, and Gladiator Mike Awesome was there and they're like, holy shit. And they were like, look, and it was like, can you believe? And I was like, what? Like, to me, I just like really cool, but I didn't, and they're like, they've never done this. And like, and then Titans like, they've never chanted people like this.
And here's the thing. And once again, you're talking about the Japanese culture, which is, we love Japan. We've been there 20, 30. I've been there 60 times, whatever. But the fact that you came in there and scared them, you earned their respect, and they were chanting Luther. Mm-hmm. They love the Dr. Luther character. Like, we would love Michael Myers in the original Halloween, or Art the Clown in Terrifier, Pinhead. Yep. We're scared of these characters, but if they came by, you'd be like, hi, Pinhead.
Yeah, totally.
You're awesome. Like, and this is the thing. Like this, we could do 7 parts of this show, and we will. But my point is, in Japan, you had a niche, and you became champion in Japan.
And there was no real – now there's, like, tons of, like, horror movie characters.
Yeah,
but
when I went,
there was none.
But we talked about this.
A lot of copies after.
But you won a title in FMW.
My fourth match. I think it was right after all
your
this.
Your fourth tour?
My fourth match.
Your fourth match in your first tour.
Yeah.
Now, it's hard to, like, dude – you don't win a title in a Japanese company as a foreigner. You can't say gaijin anymore because that's derogatory.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, yes.
Oh.
That's unbelievable. Your fourth match.
Four matches in. I wrestled Mr. Gonosuke my first match, and then I don't remember the rest. But I remember.
Who did you win the title from?
Weta.
Oh, my gosh.
The worst. I won the title in the worst match in wrestling history.
My first match in FMW was against Weta.
Terrible.
Weda, which is spelled UEDA, was a kickboxer who had zero wrestling experience, didn't want wrestling experience.
What was a champion kickboxer? Yeah. Guy was good.
But, right? Yeah, but he wasn't good at wrestling,
no,
which is what...
No.
I'll tell you my first... My very,
and was an ass.
Well, yeah, my very first... I'm 20 years old.
Yeah, we were young, man.
Very young. My first match ever in FMW was a 6-man main event. Kleiss...
Which I still call you to this Kleiss, day.
That's me, Chris. Runtz, which is Lance, and Mark Starr versus Onita, Sambo.
Oh, I love Sambo.
Sambo Osaka and Weta.
Such a nice guy.
And Weta was the worst. He was beating the shit out of me. Finally, I heard there's no rules. I went to the floor. I grabbed a chair. I hit him in the head as hard as I could. He was like Mongo from Blazing Saddles. Why'd you do that? He killed me. So Weta was not great. So you won the title from him.
I... won the title. It was terrible. I'm not going to lie about it. It's on YouTube probably. I don't know. But if people want, it's the drizzling shit.
But this is your fourth match, dude.
My fourth match in. He was so bad, I couldn't do anything with him, which you can attest. You've
He's
wrestled
terrible.
Him. So I literally choked him out. So they put me in a strap match with this guy.
A strap match with a kickboxing champion?
With a kickboxing champion.
And you choked him out?
So I just choked him out.
That's what their Stu Hart powers, brother. Did you really choke him out?
Yeah, in like a minute and something into the match.
Were
like,
you supposed to?
Not till like way later, but it's like, this guy's the shits.
How old are you, 22?
Yeah.
He's probably like 40 going, I'm not the shits. I won 75 kickboxing titles.
Well, he didn't win that night.
Okay, hold on. I want you to fast forward to the time when you were in the ring with world heavyweight champion Leon Spinks.
Oh my God! Yes.
Leon Spinks.
Leon Spinks.
Sorry, not Sphinx. He doesn't run Egypt. Tell us what that guy said to you after you've been in a match with him.
So he'd hang out in the back. He brought his manager. I talked, like, his manager hung out all the time because he needed like a handler all the time. But he was super nice to me. And
this guy with no front teeth.
No front teeth. He knocked the dude's teeth out in the ring. Like, still had power. And all he'd always say to me is, you're crazy, man. Luther, you're crazy. That's it. That's all he'd ever say. Or he'd say stuff that I didn't know. Tell you what he was saying.
But you crazy loser. And you'd be in the ring because he knew you as a real guy.
Yeah.
But he couldn't
discern. And as soon as we started wrestling, he would just literally be big-eyed and stare at me. And I have one picture of me going to tag him where he's just staring at me big-eyed. Because
he couldn't understand the difference between backstage Lenny and in the ring Luther.
Couldn't get it. Couldn't wrap his head around it.
So the point was, Luther in Japan was a big hit.
Yeah,
right.
I think so.
So what was the reason why it ended in FMW? Because FMW continued long after you left.
So I, on one of the tours, I did a drop kick off the top rope, which I used to do every night. That was one of my things.
Because you were very agile, an early version of a high flyer.
Yeah, I used to do lots of topes, lots of dives.
Well, you did a fun flip off the top rope tonight, which I've never done, so whatever. So I get it.
There you go.
You're a hot shot. So go ahead. So what happened?
I'm just as God made me, sir.
Shout out to the great Paul Benedict. That's a good pull. So what happened in FM Trouble You?
Oh my God, my cheeks hurt. What was the question?
I was asking you what happened with Luther, and you mentioned Paul Benedict. Oh, no, hold on. Who'd you mention? Paul, listen, if you thought Leon Sphinx was weird in FMW, Paul Benedict came, which is, of course, is a roper in Three's Company. Not.
Was he on the Jeffersons?
Yes.
What happened to FMW was, so I did these drop kicks off the top
rope. Oh, drop right.
Yeah. So I remember, I think it was Horace Boulder. Hulk Hogan's nephew. I think it was that match. Was it that match? Anyways, I did a drop kick off the top, and I didn't, you know when you hit and you spin and you do like a front bump?
Yeah.
Right? So I remember hitting, for some reason I did not get the spin in, and I landed down almost like a side plank.
Mm.
And it drove my arm straight up through my shoulder. So I basically dislocated my shoulder on that time. So I have the tape somewhere, I think, too. So because they used to, like, tape it or confiscate tape. I can't remember. But I got a version of this handheld. But you can see where I get up and my shoulder's, like, hanging.
Yeah, it's the Mel Gibson Lethal Weapon dislocated shoulder, right.
So I finished the match, though. Like, every time I've ever gotten hurt, I've always finished. Yeah. Like,
that's what we're taught.
I've never been, like, pin me. Like, I've always gone through.
We show up in pandemics and we finish matches.
Totally.
That's what
I
we
mean,
do.
I even got a little bit banged up today. I still did everything. Well, whatever.
Still look good. Still do. So whatever.
Good-looking guy. And then, as my mom tells me, I'm very handsome.
Leonard! So you got
up. I finish, and then, so every night on that tour, so then the next night, I like, dude, we didn't have KT tape. We didn't have fancy stuff like they got now, which is awesome. I mean, we had
hockey tape. You didn't have doctors.
No, we had us, and...
You didn't even have doctors at the shows.
No.
Nothing, right?
You know who used to work on me quite a bit? Ricky Fuji would be like...
Hold on. That's sexy muscle.
Sexy muscle. Whatever.
Sexy muscle.
So to this day, one of the things that still traumatizes me is I had sexy muscle crack my neck with a towel once.
That's the worst.
Yes, but
remember Jerry Moore used to do that?
But now I think back and I'm like, what was
sexy
I thinking?
Sexy muscle has no medical training.
No, zero.
He's sexy muscle asking how many sunglasses you have.
Or how big's your fanny pack.
Oh my gosh. And that's not a joke, guys. Jerry Moore was the same. They would give you this thing where they would put a towel around your chin.
And then put their feet on your shoulders. And
move
and then
it like back and forth, like back, 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 and pull your neck back.
Yeah.
That's the last thing you should do.
And I did that.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I did that once, but he used to also help me with my shoulder.
How are we still alive?
I don't know.
Go ahead. So sexy muscle.
Vodka? that and a lot of, was it raspberry parfaits?
Raspberry parfaits. You know, we're going to do a two-parter. Just keep going. So sexy
and
muscle.
So sexy muscle. So anyways, every night, so the next night, my arm would go up, popped out. As soon as I did a certain move, you could see it would just fall. Like
I remember that.
Dead. But I'd still finish all my matches, still do everything. I taped the hell of it. I went through so much like hockey tape. And then they would pop it back in. And to pop it back in, like I would hang up and they push it down, or you put like it hurt.
Literally almost is like the Mel Gibson. Where
yeah,
you
it was
figure
totally.
To put
it was
back.
Exactly it.
You could push it against a yep, wall,
and it would pop
you
in.
You could put it back in yourself,
and I can do that to this day. But it hurts a lot, right. And it hasn't popped. Knock on wood, it'll probably pop out tomorrow now. Right. But because once it goes out, it's just easy. I remember one time you patted me on the back and it popped my shoulder out.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, dude, because you just got me.
It was the only time I ever patted you in the back.
Only time ever, and you got me right in the right spot. Because you're so muscly, so powerful.
So sexy,
anyway, so my shoulder kept going out, and then I was like, I was getting no sleep because I was in so much pain. Like,
and this is also in Japan, right?
Yeah, I was in
you're
Japan.
In a foreign country.
I was in a ton of pain, couldn't sleep. I was like, so I told Ito, who used to handle all the foreigners.
The referee
handled the foreigners. And I was like, I need to go to a doctor. Like, at least I need pain, like something, like I'm in tons of pain. And I'd never asked for anything when I was there or really been hurt.
Because that's our generation.
You know?
That's what we do.
But this was bad because it was every night. Like, right. It was just popping out. I hadn't slept in days. Like, I was just getting worn out.
And yeah, just because you were hurt.
Yeah, because it was just bad. So they finally take me to a doctor, and it was super crowded. Like, it was packed.
In Japan. A small city? Or
yeah, what? And it was not the cleanliest, and it was super packed. I got rushed through because I was a quote-unquote celebrity. So they put me through, but putting me through on celebrity status still meant like 4 hours, right? And they take x-rays and they do this stuff. And then the doctor comes in and he sits down and he looks at me and he says, your shoulders hurt. And that was it. That was his diagnosis. I was like, I could have saved 5 hours and told you that.
And $5,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, good
so
call.
So I was like, I know it's hurt. So he gave me some pills and he's like, just take these and then don't use your arm or basically. And I was like, I have... And like 4 more weeks of this tour to go. Because
these tours would go like 4, 5, 6 weeks.
Yeah. And I was like, I have a whole tour and there's no way I'm ever missing. I mean, the only reason I even asked to go get it looked at is I needed something that could help me with
the
pain.
You're in major pain.
This is probably the most, at the time, that was the most painful thing I've ever had. Like, could not sleep or function basically. So, gave me some pain pills, which were gone in about 3 days. Thanks
because
to all
the other
guys.
Boys took them.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, Austin and Bowler and all these guys took all my stuff.
I remember when I broke my arm at Smoky Mountain Wrestling, I was like, I'm not taking any pain pills. I just didn't want to do it. Brian Lee was showing a lot of respect for me. Are you okay, brother?
The first day?
Well, the
first time
when
ever.
When I came back to the venue in Knoxville, you okay, brother? Yeah, I'm okay. Yeah, how's your arm? It's okay. Did they give you any pain pills? Yeah. Did you take them? No. You can have them. Really? Here I am. 12 pain pills for Brian Lee.
Nice. And they never spoke to you again after that.
Nope. Never once. So with the point being, you hurt your shoulder.
I went and got it done. And then the rest of that tour, it would pop out every night. It was, and then we went on the Tag Team World Tournament.
Who was your? Oh, you and Hannibal.
Which you came in third, which is awesome.
You got a bronze fake tag team medal.
But the biggest thing was we beat Onita in Cork and Hall, which was a huge upset.
Who pinned him?
I did. I pinned...
Who was it? Goto?
No, it was the judo champion who won a bronze in the 88 Olympics.
Oh,
Verchev.
Oh, you pinned him?
I pinned Verchev.
How the f*** did you work with these guys that had no experience? Because they were all terrible.
No, but have you ever seen the videos of me versus Verchev? I was 240 pounds.
Yeah.
And he'd throw me around like I was a rag.
Oh, I remember. He looked like a giant. He looked like
a
seven-stocky
like
player.
Yeah.
Big mustache.
But like 300 pounds of just giant.
Cindy's first mustache. So my point is, get to the point. Yeah. How did you end up leaving FMW?
So anyway, so I was hurt, did the tour, and then I told him I needed to take a month off. Like, I needed to rehab my shoulder.
Right.
Right? And they did not like that because they're like, well, we want to book you on this next tour. I was like, I need a month. I needed
just give me one tour off.
And they're like, okay. And then the next month, I was like, didn't hear anything. So I call, like, hey, I'm on the – and they're like, no, you're not on the next month after that. I was like, oh. So then I was like, the next month comes up. hey, am I booked on this next month? No, you're not on. And I was like, so they're being petty at this point.
Right, right.
So that's when Mexico happened with Paco. I was going to go to Mexico. But then the peso had fallen.
Okay, we're almost done. We're going to do a two-parter.
All right.
We're coming back tomorrow night.
So anyways, they didn't like...
Hold on. So the idea was, and once again, Uncle CJ goes, there's this cat that I know who's great. Yeah. And I went to Paco Alonso and said...
Because you were wrestling down there quite a bit.
Yes, yeah. Made a whole living there.
You're in the magazines.
In magazines, on the covers. And I said, listen, man, like, I know a guy. Because they like weird... right back where we started. They like weirdos. But I was like, I got a guy that can come in and they do like, they look, they have Psycho Clown is a guy there.
Yeah.
Crazy mask that looks like the worst Psycho Clown mask. If you go to like Century City and buy a clown mask, it's like, I got a guy and Dr. Luther and Paco Alonso, I showed him your stuff. And he's like, Paco is the boss in Mexico. I love
first he asked you, is he a mechanic? And you told me that.
What?
Because I was wearing the outfit.
Coverall?
Yeah, because he didn't see the other part. He just saw the coveralls. And he goes, is he a mechanic?
Yes, I'm going to bring this mechanic, the evil mechanic, to you. But I said, I've got a guy that people will buy because Mexican fans are very much like Japanese. They're like, they believe. Lots of kids. And I brought the mechanic in. And he's like, he literally said to me, Paco Alonso, we will bring him in. We'll sign him. I love it. He looks great. Your endorsement is great. Let's do it. Yes, Lenny. Hey. Hello. Hey, Len. It's Chris. Anyways, you're in. You're booked. Whatever. And then, like 3 days later, the peso crashed, yep. And the whole economy.
Once again, my luck fell out. Strikes.
And so, tell me what happened from your end.
So then,
we'll go to part two.
So then he's like, "No one, we can't bring you in. We can only bring you."
This is Paco. You're talking to Paco Alonso. Yeah. This is the Vince McMahon of Mexico.
But basically,
this is the Tony Khan of Mexico.
Before he had called me, I knew that it dropped because you had told me, "Oh, it's like,"
and it dropped huge.
It's like a quarter of what they're offering.
Yes,
not even.
Yes.
But then I got offered a contract in South Africa, which was very good money at
very
the time.
Very lucrative.
So I took the South Africa gig because it paid more.
But the Mexico gig, did they still want you?
Nothing was said after that. They just said that was done or whatever.
Okay. So there was a chance to go to Mexico.
Yeah.
But literally, and we're telling a story here, and we're going to part two whenever we do it. You had the gig, and it was pulled away by circumstances out of your control,
yes.
Which is the bottoming out of the economy.
Yes.
Right. So we're going to go to part two, but the last question is...
So I took South Africa, and then after I took South Africa, they called me. They're like, oh, we want you on the show, FMW. And I was like, already got bookings.
Gotcha.
And they were like, well, cancel. And I was like, I'm not going to cancel them because... You guys,
but we're gonna go into huge South Africa in part two, but to end part one, which is right now.
And so that's when they got mad, and they're like, "Okay, well." And then I never got that. Basically, just got.
They were sulking.
Sulking, but I did go back and did a pay per view with them in 2000.
Yeah, we're gonna get to that. Last question for episode one: what's the best Love Weasel song?
Oh my god, Love Weasel. Love Goes the Weasel.
Okay, we're going to end the show with this. Len called me. There's no email. There's no cell phones. I think I might have called Len.
Yeah, we used to talk like schoolgirls on the phone.
Yeah, on the phone, yeah. I think I called from Germany in Hamburg in 93. And he's like, when you get home, we're recording a demo. I'm like, what? And so we used to record our own stuff.
I got a 4-tracks in Japan. Yeah,
4-track. They now record on... 400 tracks, but we had a 4-track. So anyways, we did some rock and roll, and Len did a Love Weasel album, and I did a Great Scissor Ghost album on a 4-track. We can get more into this in part two, but the bottom line was that the Love Weasel album led to a live show at Scott McMonagle's party.
Yep.
Scott McMonagle was a great guy. He had a bad toupee. It's true. He'll live. He went bald at 18. He was one of the first toupees. This is in 93, 94. And it was always be askew.
Am I right, Len? Come on, man.
True. I love you, Scott.
But I do too. But he would tell you his toupee was always askew.
Yeah.
And he had a party at his house.
He did.
That he hired Love Weasel, which was Len's band.
He did.
To play the gig. Now, can you explain, please, what happened? Who was in the band and what happened after the first song?
So Tim Uskin, who I love, Tim Uskin.
Timmy.
So awesome artist, by the way. Little shout out to him. Still talk to him. And Kevin Rowland, who plays in.
Kevin Rowland was on drums.
Yes. And he's actually in a band that's like pretty popular now. But he showed up super late.
Hold on. The band Love Weasel was Lenny Olsen on guitar and vocals. Timmy Uskin on bass, and Kevin Rowland on drums.
Yes, sir.
And this is at the house party at Scott
McMonagle's house. In front of a festival crowd.
I was there.
You were there.
And so was Jason Helton.
And his girlfriend.
Oh, wow. Ooh, let's not go there. Continue.
That was the girl at the party.
Yeah.
And then...
You did. Continue.
And so... He shows up late. He's really bad. And I remember, what did I say? I turned it. I was like, I am never playing with you again.
The first song was Love Goes the Weasel. It's like the
hit.
It's like the movie Can't Hardly Wait. Whereas they were called Love Burger. The moment you guys started, there was like literally 17 people packed into the basement. You guys played the first song. And after the first song was done, you disbanded Love Weasel live in front of people. You went... You're the shits. I'm never playing with you again.
No, we're done.
I quit.
Yeah.
And we're all just sitting there going,
but then I finished the set.
No, you did not.
I did. I got the whole thing on tape.
Without a drummer.
So no, he stayed. I said, well, this is the last gig we're ever playing, but we finished it. We finished the show, but then I never played with him again.
But here's the denouement, and then we're going to end part one. Love Weasel finished the show. And then Scott McMonagle's iguana went missing.
Dude, he had... One time I stayed at his place, and he's like, hey, have you seen my snakes? He had these two boa constrictors. I was like, what? He goes, they've been out for weeks. I don't know. They're somewhere on the walls. And I was like, scared shitless. I'm like, so I'm sleeping here with two giant snakes just traveling around your house.
And this is when he moved to iguanas. And Scott McMonagle's iguana disappeared. And Love Weasel broke up. And then Scott McGonagall finds his iguana in
the vent.
He sees the iguana. He unscrews the vent, pulls it off. And
how did the thing get in there?
The iguana jumps on his face and fucking attacks his owner. And ripped. Do you remember this, Len?
I do not remember this.
Dude, it ripped his fucking lip off.
I don't remember this.
I remember.
I must have been busy.
I remember it's like it was yesterday. Love Weasel broke up.
Then I remember him having the lip thing, but I can't remember.
Because the iguana came out of the air, out of the vent, and jumped on his face and ripped his lip off. The party ended early because McMonagle had to go to a plastic surgeon.
Everyone out. Party's
and
over.
And his wig was askew. We'll see you next week for part two.